Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the greatest show on earth.
It's lads, dads, and a couple of beers. Big Al and Dave chatting to a couple of peers, covering the topics that you're gonna wanna hear, making you laugh your ass off while holding back the tears. Crazy stories, celebrity guests. Come and take a minute to relieve some stress. Regardless of your background, religion, or wealth, the most important conversation is about mental health. Sponsored by F2B Clothing from Buntingford Brewery.
Hello and welcome back to Let's Dance and a Couple of Beers with me, Big Al, and your co-host, Dave. Oh. Yeah.
So that's like the new extended version of the intro, is it?
Yeah, I think every week I listen to Forms absolutely killing it with our intro. Big up Forms. Happy birthday, mate, today as well. 22
Happy
today.
Happy birthday, Forms, yeah.
Young whippersnapper. And I just think, you know what? I'm going to bust a vocal. It's terrible, but, you know, fuck it.
He's really hard to follow, though, isn't he? He's a bit of a talent.
He's a massive talent. Mm. He's a big old talent. Anyway, let's get the sponsors out of the way like we do every week. Massive thank you to our sponsors, F2B Clothing, the clothing brand where you're free to be whatever you want to be. Go and check them out at www.f2bclothing.co.uk.
And a massive shout out to Charlie and Andy from Buntingford Brewery. Go and follow them on all their socials as well. They're big on the old Book of Face. Not so big on the gram of Insta, but go and follow them and they'll be supplying you with drink all through the summer season. So
bloody love a gram of Insta.
Hey, the gram of Insta and the Book of Face.
Speaking of grams, Yorkshire Peach last week talking about her addictions. She was brilliant. She was funny.
She was really good. Yeah.
Our downloads rocketed last week.
Oh, come on then. Let's hear some stats. Come on, Stato.
Well, no, we just did really, really well. It was the most downloaded episode of Series 2.
Mm.
So that's a big one.
That's quite interesting. I mean, it was a really funny episode, but as you've told me before, you need to be listening before it counts. So people have said, go and listen to this episode, it's really funny. Or they've just taken a chance and a pot.
I'm pretty sure with podcasts, you have to listen to the first 10 minutes in order for it to count as a download. So
yes,
that means
we're pretty sure
engaged.
Yeah.
But look, it was great. And the feedback we got about old, what's her name? With the buggy minge.
Brenda Dixon. So just so you all know, I've been reaching out to Brenda on all her socials. She hasn't got back to me yet, but hopefully someday... she will. So if you want to follow Brenda, her Insta handle is baggy_minge. Joking. Poor Brenda.
Oh, God. I mean, I reckon that was the funniest one I've ever heard.
Oh, mate. I don't even know what to say.
It was brilliant.
Homeless geezer and then Brenda. Two of my favourites so far.
I have to make it quite clear, and again, to new listeners as well, because I think we pick up new listeners every week, depending on the guest. We have a section in our podcast called The Crazy Corner, in which we'll find the crazy headline story that's out there in the mainstream media, and we'll just have a laugh about it. We're not poking fun at people. We're not taking the piss. We're not trying to show people up. If this story is of a sensitive nature, but still funny, we don't go into depth in it. It's only when... we know for a fact that there's been authorization for the story to be printed. So we have a bit of a laugh and we have a bit of a joke. I know everything I'm saying that now is because I've got a belter today.
So, yeah, Alex is very, very cocksure of himself this week. I've already had the text message saying, you wait, this story this week is an absolute gem. Now, I found one this week and I thought that was a belter, but I'm prepared to let mine rest. And you
well,
take all
I
glory.
Can't take the credit for it.
Oh no.
Massive fan of the podcast. Jono Kirkland. We're all familiar with Jono. He sent us a lot of stuff in as well for the podcast. I set him a little challenge to find me a story.
Okay.
And I'm not kidding. He came back in about 50 seconds. With an absolute belter. And he's got COVID at the moment, so he's obviously signed off work for 10 days. So wish you all the best, mate, from everyone here. Get well soon. But yeah, it's been. How have you been? How's the week been? Talk to me. Let's go.
Week's been all right. Yeah. Obviously,
sun's out.
My eldest has still got a broken leg, so there's no change there. busy old week at work as well. So been going up north more often in the past week or so. But apart from that, mate, everything is good. We're getting right to the stage of the year now where it's obviously holiday season is upon us. But this is mostly... correct. For me, especially, all the last year's worth of events that were cancelled all seem to be happening now in the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks. So we've got some hugely busy weekends coming up, and it has paid detriment to the podcast in a way or two, hasn't it? Because we've been very kindly invited out by a few of our former guests that want to see us and have a drink. And,
which also...
And our schedule's just rammed. I ain't got no time.
I spoke to Angelica Bell today. Do you know where she was today?
Oh, no.
Tesco head office.
Oh, what? Shire Park?
Which is what? The listeners don't understand. That's about 4 minutes away from where we live.
Yeah, that's like a 5 minute walk to yours, about a 10 minute walk to mine. Like.
So I texted her and said, Oi, would you work? Hold on, let me put it up again. Where is it? Oi, would you be wanting to see today? How did you know? You spying?
Angelica Bell in our ends and doesn't bail us up. How can you be in our ends and not bail us up?
Well, she has said about meeting up for drinks next week.
But yeah, we're just really busy, pal, aren't we?
We are.
Loads of different stuff going on. I've got to tell you about one thing that I'm going to in a couple of weeks' time, which I'm so excited
I know what it is.
Oh, go on then.
It's Goat Fest with a DJ.
No, it wasn't that. But yeah, that is in a couple of weeks as well.
28th of August, 5 till 7 on the main stage. Go get your tickets at www.goatfest.com.
And all of that. But no, I'm going to see the fantastically marvellous Tom Jones at Hampton Court Palace as one of my birthday presents from March. Yeah, and I went to see
Tom Jones at the O2.
Yeah.
When I was about 19.
He was still ancient then.
Mate, like, there was only ever two times that I really mastered pulling birds.
Oh.
And it was at a Tom Jones concert.
Old were the birds?
40. Yeah, about 40. And Boxing Day. Now, Boxing Day, I hear you cry.
Let's hear this.
Reason for it, every single Christmas, single mums will always have the kids on Christmas Day. Then they ship the kids off to the dads on Boxing Day and all the girls get together down the pub on Boxing Day.
Right, boom. Okay.
So what happens? Young 20-year-old Alex walks in. Hello, ladies.
Yeah. And AKA the Predator.
Yeah, and I get, fuck off, you fat prick. Now, speaking of like old chat ups and stuff, I saw a chat up line on TikTok the other day, and I'm going to have to bleep it, but I just want you to, I want your reaction.
Oh, God.
Okay. Right. Oh, God. Mate, this is how far things have come. I mean, let's put it this way. We used to go with the classics, didn't we? Like, is your name Gillette because you're the best a man can get? You know, little things like that.
Did it hurt?
Yeah, when you fell from heaven, all that. No. Yeah. The kids of today have upped their game.
Oh, mate, okay.
I'll read to you this, Dave. Hello. Nice to meet you. Stop me if I'm being too romantic, but I would appear just to have a drink with you.
No way! Stop that!
How bad is that?
That is horrific.
So
absolutely horrific.
But apparently it's working for the ladies, so, you know,
wow.
I'm glad I didn't have daughters. Good luck.
Oh, mate. Oh, that's actually made me feel a bit sick.
But the thing is that I was speaking about like low-key embarrassments and stuff like that. Like, and I said to this lad that I've done a bit of work with, I was like, do you not get embarrassed by anything? Like, you kids seem to be so like confident these days, everything. He's like, no. And I was like, well, what sort of things do you get embarrassed about as a kid? And I'm like random things. Like, and people will relate to this. Crossing the road at a zebra crossing is the most awkward, embarrassing thing in the world for no reason. When the barber shows you the back of your head with a mirror,
then
you just nod.
Yeah, it's great.
That, for some reason, that's like really, really embarrassing.
I like when a shop gives you change and there's one of them charity pots on the till counter.
Yeah.
Or when you like 3p and change, you put it straight in your pocket.
Yeah, or like when you say, oh, can you start shoving it in a charity box? And they go, Are you sure? That's quite a lot. Ordering food.
Some people do have this.
Like, it's a bit awkwardly embarrassing.
And even like talking on the telephone to a stranger.
Yeah.
So be that from wherever. People struggle with that.
But it's like, if you go to any barbershop in the world, you'll always see that lad just sitting awkwardly. Like, yeah. You never see anyone go, actually, mate, can you just step up a bit more at the back?
Yeah, or mate, that looks dog shit. Can you put it back on?
Yeah, exactly. And what was the other one I said to him? Oh, people singing you happy birthday.
Yeah, in restaurants as well. So like places like TGI Fridays and the whole restaurant starts singing. You're like, mate.
Or in like Frankie and Benny's when that big scary fuck off bear used to come running out.
Oh,
and last one, going for a piss in the middle of a cinema and then having to walk back in.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever done that.
Well, you just piss yourself.
Yeah, basically. No, I think I've only left... I've left the cinema once, halfway through a film, probably not even halfway, right at the beginning of the film.
Really?
Yeah, but I've never gone to the bathroom halfway through, never gone to get more refreshments or anything like that. Basically, I pulled a whitey in the cinema once.
What? From what? What were you doing?
Smoking cannabis.
Right, hold on. Hold on a minute. Because it was only in the last episode, I actually said to you, you've never smoked weed in your life.
Yeah, I have smoked weed, yeah, but I haven't done anything else. But,
so well, you say that next week. Every week's going on.
You might find out a bit more. Keep the listeners interested and all of that.
It's just crackhead.
No,
episode 35. Dave is in rehab.
Yeah, coming live
from the Priory.
I was with my friend Steve,
smoking Steve,
and he had a Renault 5 GT Turbo at the Renault 5 at the time, not GT.
But no relevance to the story whatsoever.
No, we was smoking in that car, and then we went to the cinema. I can't even remember what we went to see, but I just remember turning around to him after about 5 minutes of being in the cinema and being like, mate, I've got to get out of here. I was tripping out hard. So we left and then we drove back to my house when I lived with my mum. And I was kind of nice and mellow by that point, right? And they were getting ready to go to my cousin's hen weekend. So there was loads of like dick shaped objects all in my mum's living room. And I was like, I thought it was the best thing ever. I was like, look at this. Like, doing all stupid shit. And of course, Steve was with me. He was stoned and he was like, and my mum was like, what's the matter with you? Why are you so interested in these like dick straws and things like that? And I was like, way. Yeah. That's why I don't do drugs.
God, no, I don't think I've ever had a story quite like that from anything like hallucinogenic or anything. I mean, I did actually tell a lie. I went to Amsterdam for my 18th birthday. Mm. My cousin took me and I tried a bit of space cake.
Yeah.
What happened was we went with an old friend of mine who was a hippie. There's no better way to put it. He was just a hippie. So he knew Amsterdam like the back of his hand. Yeah. And he went and bought this big cake and goes, right, here you go, mate. Fill your boots. And I'm like, okay. And he started to explain to me about space cakes and all the history around and everything, which I had no interest in. And then someone recognized him, so he started talking. So I'm just sitting there eating this cake. And then all of a sudden I started to fear this. I'm like 18, so I had a bit more. He come back and he went, oh, have you met some friends? I was like, no, I've been on my own. Why? And he went, where's the cake? And I was like, I've eaten it. And he went, you're not meant to eat the whole fucking thing. And I'm like, oh no, I'm pissed off. Like, he went, Alex, have you eaten the whole thing? I was like, yeah. And he went, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah. And I was quite big when I was younger. I was about 20 stone. He was like, well, maybe because you weight, you're just absorbing it. Well, about 3 minutes later, I saw this shark playing golf and this leprechaun on the back of like the back of him, sort of like trying to play golf with him. And they caught me like looking all a bit dazed. And my mate said to me, mate, we need to get everyone together because you need to go back to the room. And I'm like, okay. And I kept walking off and like, nearly falling in the canal. And he said to me, right, see these railings, hold on to them. I was like, okay. He said, if you let go of these railings, you're going to die. Six hours later, I'm still holding these railings. Everyone's laughing at me. I'm crying. I'm asking for my mum. My hands have got blood running down and I'm gripping them too hard. And then my mate, my cousin comes back and he's like, Have we found everyone? I'm like, yeah. And Nathan's like, yeah, it's fine, we found everyone. I'm like, oh, where's Nick? Like, my mate Nick. And my cousin went, he's dead. He's dead. I start crying. Oh, mate. It was one of the only times I've ever actually taken, like, hallucinogenic drugs and stuff like that. I don't promote it. I don't, you know, this is, we're predominantly a mental health podcast, but look, we talk about life experience as well. So don't jump on us for that one.
It's, do you know what? It's a really funny thing. I don't like the feeling of not being in control. And I know some people thrive off that, don't they?
But you don't even like it after a drink.
No, I don't get really drunk either. And I think that I don't like feeling sick. I don't like being sick.
No, same.
And I think that's why I have to go home. I have to call it a night if I start to feel a bit ropey. I kind of hit my limit and I just stop drinking, stop everything. We'll have a soft drink or a big glass of water and then carry on.
Yeah, I think also I've noticed as well with you is that you get a little bit giddy and then you just cut off. You're done then.
Yeah. It's because I don't want to go over the point of no return. You know what I mean? And then start to feel shit and then want to have to go home. So I'd rather just stop drinking, start drinking soft drinks. And then
I never used to be like, I used to think it was all bullshit, all this thing about people who say, oh, I get violent on Jack Daniels or can't drink that because I get this or get drink that. Because I've always been absolutely fine on everything. And I'm the same level no matter what. Nah. Gin. In the last six months, turns me into an absolute blubbering mess.
Well, I know somebody else that said that gin makes them really emotional. I've never really had that with gin either. I've probably drunk gin to excess a few times. And where I said excess, sort of just being on the gin, not being on anything else.
What, gin straight?
No, so like gin with a mixer.
Like
gin and tonic. So, I can drink, I like gin liqueurs. I'm not too cool on just gin. So like dry gin and things like that. It's not really my bag, but.
So anyway.
Let's talk about the guest.
Yeah, let's get off the topic of booze and drugs.
Booze and drugs.
we never talk about the podcast. We talk about drink, but we never talk about drugs on the podcast.
Yeah, no.
Especially drug taking by us.
Yeah, no. Scrap that. Next.
So let's talk about the guest. So this week we have.
This is an interesting guest.
An ex-Premiership rugby union player.
Scrum half.
Yeah, hung up his boots in
2019 at 30 years old. Played for the Harlequins.
He's now a financial planner as well, funny enough.
Yeah, he is a financial planner.
We're going to talk to him about his retirement. We're going to talk to him about leaving the game. We're going to talk to him about how he felt going from that to that. It's going to be quite an interesting chat.
Yeah, it should be quite good. Funny enough, he says himself he's normally the shortest person in the room, which will be really interesting to see his take on such an alpha male environment and being around bigger, badder boys.
Yeah, because he's not used to that in a rugby dressing room. Without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Mr. Davey Lewis.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
How are you, sir? All right.
I'm good. Yeah, very good. As we're just talking about just getting through bedtime, always a bit of a lottery. All good. All good.
Yeah, let's talk about kids straight away. What you got? How old?
Yeah, so I've got one of each.
Nice.
Libby's the oldest one. She's 4 in a couple of months. And we've got Teddy, who is 1 next Thursday. So,
ooh, wow.
Yeah.
So you've been a busy young man.
Yeah, Teddy's a lockdown baby, isn't he?
Bloody hell. Was he busy
But no, it's been good. We were quite keen to sort of have him, I guess, like relatively young. We were in Exeter, right, when Rach got pregnant with Livy, and we were very old to not have kids. Like all our mates had kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like 20, you know, like around like 23, 24. And then we came out to London and we were instantly like really young parents. Like everyone was
sort
of at least into their 30s a lot of the time.
So what were you? You're 28, 29?
Now?
No, when you had the daughter.
28.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I was 20. Yeah, that is normal.
I think you were about that. I was 30 when we had our eldest, but then I got married at 29. How old were you when you got married?
29. No.
Yeah.
Hang on. I got married at 23.
maybe 30. I don't know.
Don't worry, she won't listen. It's fine.
Let's
talk about you, Dave. So for people that are out there that are listening that have obviously heard the wonderful intro that me and Al have done for you, which you'll hear when the cast goes out. But tell people everybody a bit about you. So what you're famous for. We normally do this thing where you might be too young, but back in the MSN days, before the wonderful world of social media, they used to do this thing called ASL, which was AIDS, Sex and Location.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us a bit about you. You can do your ASL if you want. What makes you famous? What you used to do for a living and stuff like that?
Okay, so I'm Dave Lewis. I'm 32. I'm dad to Livy and Teddy, and I've got a wife who's... I'm definitely punching, I'm not going to lie.
It's we've seen pictures, mate, of you definitely batting.
I'm punching as well, it's fine.
But Dave is as well.
Yeah. That's where you want to be, isn't it? Like,
aim high, brothers, aim high.
And whereabouts are you in the country now?
Oh, so now we live in Sunbury-on-Thames, which is, we think it's London, but we get told regularly that it's not London. We're somewhere in...
I don't know, really. It's a bit of a tricky
one. It's an outer borough, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's Surrey, which is apparently not London.
I guess it's not London, but it's nice.
It depends what part. If you're, I don't know, the boys in Chelsea will probably say it's not London because they're quite proud of their Chelsea, like Chelsea. But
it's not London, is it? It might be London, but it's not London. It ain't London town.
You're not walking out your ass and getting mugged and seeing needles on the floor, are you?
No, you're fine, mate.
Like you're not in London.
Although saying that, Livy's come up from preschool with that accent now. She's
really?
That's brilliant. So you haven't mentioned what you used to do for a living, Dave.
No, I haven't got around to that bit yet. That's about the least important bit. But yeah, I used to play rugby for about 12 years in the Premiership. So across a few different teams. I'm a South West boy, so I started at Gloucester, went down to Exeter, which is actually my sort of home club, and then came up to the Harlequins for the last 2 years, and then retired at about 30.
What was the reason for the retirement?
Mate, nothing to do with injuries or anything. I was just done. I had played quite a lot, pretty much started or was on the bench for the first sort of 10 years of my career, and then came to Quinns and pretty much just held a tackle pad for 2 years. And I kind of just had enough. We had an option to go up to the Midlands and play like another couple of years. But my wife has got quite a good job and I wasn't really enjoying it. And we had an opportunity where we could actually put some roots down. Mm. And for us, like the big thing for me was that obviously professional sport was brilliant and it's given us a lot and obviously always grateful for it. But I was never one of those players that had the chance of having like a one club career. I think unfortunately I just didn't work out for me. So like moving around and everything like that it's a bit stressful, can be a bit rubbish sometimes. And we had the opportunity to not do that anymore. We love where we live. The kids obviously have grown up around here and it's a nice place for them to grow up, etc. I'd done a bit off the field from rugby to prepare for whenever that happens. Just basically started applying for jobs and got one. So yeah, it was my decision to leave kind of there was a contract offer, but it wasn't brilliant, so I could have played. But yeah, just decided actually this is the right time for me to leave. And I still play a little bit of semi-pro stuff, which is good. Good fun, like very just enjoyable, actually, to be honest.
Did you find it a tough transition when you stepped out of something you've done for so long at quite an elite level as well? It's quite important to say that. To then being, I guess for a while, probably a stay-at-home dad for a bit.
Straight
into work.
I wish I had done that. I literally walked out of training on like a Friday, for example. I think maybe I had a week. So we finished up the season, did our like end of year piss ups and everything, and that lasted a few days. And then
of course it does. Rugby boys know how to drink.
They know how to have a good time.
I've got to say, I've been out on the piss with all the old army lads, and I've been out on the piss with my mate who plays local rugby here. And it doesn't even compare to what the army boys are like.
Really?
They're just mental.
Yeah.
like they're always stupid games.
Yeah.
All these different challenges, all these different dares. It was just, I don't really get uncomfortable on a night out, like with lads. But I felt uncomfortable, all the stuff they were doing. I've never seen something like that as well. It's just knobs everywhere.
No comment.
No comment. Yeah, the wife's going to listen.
Dave, when did you realise, growing up, that rugby was what you wanted to do?
I always loved it. I was like 6 or 7, just always loved playing it. We play like on a Saturday, no, sorry, not a Saturday, but play in the week for the school and then play on a Sunday for the club. And, mate, I just loved it. Like, I think Dad used to play rugby, but he wasn't, you know, he used to play everything. He used to be, in fact, I think his best stuff was he used to do loads of surf life saving, and he was brilliant at that. So, like, on the water sort of stuff. Mm. Yeah, I just took to it, and then just always played it for fun, and I was pretty good. And then I think my dad, I was at a school which was a really nice school, and the Exeter Chiefs weren't in the Premiership then, but there was an academy down in Devon called the Southwest Academy. Okay. And they invited me along to that, and that went quite well. And then when it came to sort of under 15, under 16, I'd gone to England, schoolboys, and they basically then came and said, look, we've got, it was Ivory Bridge College at the time, but you can come down to Ivory Bridge and effectively try and get a professional contract with hopefully the Exeter Chiefs, or that didn't work out for me, but I went somewhere else. And Dad just sat me down in the car, and I remember it now. And because we were, I was going to like a private school, but on a scholarship through sports. So it was a good school. My grades were pretty good. And Dad just kind of said, how do you feel about giving this a go? Like, it's up to you, sort of thing. And I'd never really thought about playing professionally before then. But then when we had that conversation, I was like, yeah, damn right, I want to have a crack at it. So I think from 15 maybe, I thought, actually, it's not just something that I just love doing. It's actually something that I can get paid to do. And actually, it's kind of like a career potentially. So yeah, that's how it happened.
Cool. So let's talk about contracts and things like that. So give you a bit of background on, I love the details, Dave. And I love the details. I love asking stuff that people don't want to ask and things like that. So I want to know about the contracts, because we hear about the football contracts and the massive amounts of money and the years and years that they're worth, and how much they're worth a week, how much they're worth an hour. So you don't have to give me that much detail, but
no, I don't really mind.
Tell us about the contracts. Like, when they ask you to sign a professional contract, do you have to take legal advice for it? Is the money as good as, I don't know, a lower league football, or is it like minimum wage?
Mate, I'm quite open with it. So my first 2 years at Gloucester were both single year contracts. Mm. And obviously they do take a punt on you, but my first year was $5,000, second year was 10. And you get match bonuses and stuff. And I was lucky in my second year that I end up playing quite a bit. So like, obviously you get some match bonuses, but they're kind of like 250 a bench, 500 a start sort of thing. So it's nowhere near football.
No.
I can hear the little one, one of them. yeah, so nowhere near football money. But then after my second year, obviously I think I must have played like 10 first team games, or maybe 15 or 10 or 15 first team games. So renegotiated. I think by this stage I had an agent. I think for my first two, I didn't. Technically my third contract, but I was only like 20. I had an agent, and he kind of negotiated for me on my behalf, which was good. And then, I think it was like 30, 40, and then something like 70, 80 until, so that took me up to sort of 24. So, but yeah, by the time I'm 20 to 24, I'm earning really good money.
For yeah, it's nothing to be sniffed at, is it?
Yeah, for doing something that you love doing, definitely.
Yeah, no, it was really, like, I was chuffed to bits with it. So obviously I had mates that were still at uni and stuff like that. So, it was really good. But, like, in comparison to football, it's...
No, it's nowhere near.
There is no comparison, is there?
No, exactly.
We've got a friend who's a friend of the podcast and a friend of mine. He plays professional football. He played for Sheffield United for some years and MK. And he was telling me about his contracts and how in depth they are. And because I queried him on why contracts can take so long in football. Right. And he says there's things in there like keywords that are put into a contract that you can't say during like a match interview. And then they've got to have media training before they can get the contract signed. I should imagine in the rugby premiership, it's not as scrutinized as that. It's probably not as long as and detailed out as that.
No. I mean,
there must be stuff in there like, you know, don't go out and beat someone up. But
yeah. I mean, the contracts are all like, they're all standardized. I think in the premiership, you've basically got, say, like a 30, 40 page document, and there's only like 2 pages in it, which are actually any different to each other's.
Wow.
But it is all standardized. It's all, and it's all the things that you just mentioned there, like don't bring the game into disrepute, don't bring the club into disrepute, all of that sort of stuff, which to a lot of people is kind of common sense. And yeah, you're right. Like when you join the academy and stuff like that, you do get media training. And again, it's just obviously be pretty vanilla in any interview and don't give too much away. I actually have to say that I think actually it's got a lot more honest in the last year, especially.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I think they realise that they actually have platforms to be a bit more honest and say what they think. Like podcasts, for example, is a good one.
Yeah.
Obviously, social media's gone crazy. But I mean, yeah, like I've got a mate at the moment who fell out of the club that he was at for a while. And kind of came out in a paper and said what had happened from his point of view. And then the club kind of said, we're fining you, but we're not going to actually, we can't really do anything because you have been honest, but you've just basically
aired the wrong way.
Aired something that doesn't make us look very good. So if you do it again, we'll basically like dock your wages and stuff like that. But
it's that player power thing, isn't it? It comes into.
Exactly.
Too big for the club and everything like that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But does rugby carry arrogance like it does within football? Like obviously within football it's full of egos and arrogance. You see it from obviously the behind the scenes stuff that footballers put on their Instagram, like the changing rooms and then walking in with their Gucci's and Louis Vuittons. I should imagine you boys don't care if you pop down Tesco's and get a fucking t-shirt from George.
No, it's the same shoes one.
Primani.
No, mate, like, to be fair, like, you have your individuals that like your Gucci bags and stuff like that. Like, I've seen it, definitely seen it, but there's just not the money, mate, to be fair. Like,
true.
Yeah, no, like, boys, in terms of, like, egos, I guess it's like any work environment. Like, there'll be a couple of people in it who, you know, have a bit of an ego, but, no, most of the guys I've met have been fine, like, been nice guys. Obviously, everyone's quite confident. They have to be to do what they do.
That kind of rolls me on to my next bit, Dave. Obviously, us being predominantly a mental health podcast, it's only right that we should talk about mental health, especially in the game of rugby, where it's such a dominant male environment. And like you said, confident individuals that can cast quite an alpha masculine shape onto any kind of changing room. What's your experience like with mental health in the game? Is there support for people that have off days as a professional sports person in the rugby world?
There's definitely support out there. Like there's a rugby players union called the RPA, and they've got a service which I've actually used post rugby. But I mean, in most teams. So to start from the start, obviously, like you say, it's an alpha male sport. Most teams that I've either known about or played within have like a the Chiefs, basically, it was psychologically in a game, you will never put your hands on your knees, you'll never put your hands on your head. you just stand there with your hands on your hip, and it's all about basically projecting the fact that you're fine in a game.
Right.
And what I found later on in my career when I started reading a bit about it and just becoming a bit more experienced is, for me, this has actually spilled over into a lot of other aspects of my life you just don't show anything, no tails and stuff like that. And in terms of, you mentioned transition earlier, the hardest thing for me when I transitioned was that my mum passed away in sort of October, and I obviously retired in July. And I really struggled to talk to anyone about it, because obviously it was a really rubbish time for everyone anyway, and it always will be.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I was like, in my head, I was like, I've got to be the strong one. That's what I'm used to, like no tails sort of thing. So yeah, like I think it's becoming more open now. Like there's definitely, like if I was still in that rugby environment, there definitely would have been boys that I could have gone and spoken to and would have spoken to about it and everything. But yeah, I think as a youngster coming in, I don't know what they're like now, because obviously I've been out of that environment for a couple of years, but I was definitely like, just shut up and get on with it for quite a while. But I mean, and I feel bad, like one of my teammates at Harlequins was Joe Marler, who you may have seen do a mental health documentary of Sky recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like people like him who are like, he's massive physically, and he's also a massive character in the game. So like people like him coming out and talking about mental health. Carl Sinclair's another one, similar position, big guy.
Gareth Thomas as well.
Yeah, I was about to say Gareth.
Yeah, exactly. And these guys coming out about it just kind of like normalize it. Because people have like off days. And it's important to talk about it, because I think that's the best way to sort of
100%. That's fascinating though, the stuff you say
about
the body language. That's blown my mind.
But I mean, again, like it's not uncommon. So like I talk about the Exeter Chiefs because that was my team, and that's one of the things that we used to do at Chiefs. I've heard like
at what stage, Davey, did they say that that's what you had to do? Was it like militant, like?
Oh, like pre-season.
You put your hands on your hips, you don't put them on your knees.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Because it's a stature thing, isn't it? You see so many rugby players doing that.
Mm.
But it's like in football, you always see the, hands on the head. And
yeah.
That has massive signs like dictatorships and stuff like that. Like,
well, you can look at it from strange. Two ways. You can look at it like from the point of we're going to war, you need to look like you're ready to go. Show no weakness, show no fear.
Like the hacker sort of thing.
Yeah, or you can look at, perfect example, like the hacker. Or you can look at it from the other side of like, this is manipulation of my emotions.
Yeah.
Like I feel now unnatural. I now feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
People do natural things based on how they receive an emotion. Like, you know, if I see someone, I don't know, break their leg on a football pitch, I'm like, oh, squeamish, hands on my head, don't want to look away. Or you got other people that are like, right, the Christian Eriksen thing, for example, there was so divided on how the players did that. There was six or five of them that crowded around him and took this, you know, strong approach and did everything that they should have done. And there was four or five that just couldn't. They were hands on their knees, they were crying. But I guess on a rugby field, if that situation happens, it's a case of stand over your hands on your hips.
I think, to be fair, in a situation like an injury, like they wouldn't mind. This was more from the point of view of like tiredness and
don't show your weakness.
Yeah, show your weakness.
So like it would start in pre-season, and like I said, I'll use Exeter Chiefs as an example, but every side does it. They talk about, you know, body position, and obviously, to be fair, standing with your hands on your hips is actually good to get all the oxygen in. So there is like science behind it.
It's the same thing in boxing. Opens
your chest up, doesn't it?
When I used to box, you go back to the corner and you see very little boxers do it. I should have spoke this last week with Jordan, but instead of sitting there on the stool, I was never allowed to sit on the stool.
Yeah.
I was always told to stand up and put my hands behind the back of my head. Mm. I open up my lungs, get the oxygen going, and then my tanks come back again. I'm ready to go. But maybe on the other side, who's been sitting there, he's got off his stool. It's a psychological thing. You're sitting down, you're having a rest. You know, it's not conducive to what you're doing. So I understand it from that point of view, definitely.
Yeah, but no, I think there's I've talked about it with a mate before, like in terms of like mental health in rugby. I think that it's definitely been highlighted now. Like, there's definitely more psychologists within teams at Premiership level. They're actually being utilised. I know at my last club, Quinns, they've got one, which is really good, I think. And I've chatted to a few boys about that, and they've found it very positive. Mm. And I think it's just a bit more of an open conversation now.
Mm. Definitely.
Which it definitely feels like the tide is starting to turn.
Yeah.
And it's more of a acceptable conversation to have. I mean, me and Al have spoken at length on here about our own personal struggles with mental health. So
yeah,
what's apart from obviously the death of your mum, which is a terrible thing to go through, mate. And I know exactly where you're coming from there. I've had parental grief myself. So I've had it a little bit longer than you have. So my dad passed away when I was 10. So that was 30 years this year. So I know how that feels. But what about other mental health struggles that you've had sort of in your own journey? What's that been like, Davey? You had many? I mean, you spoke about the pressure of having to provide for the family and everything like that. I think anybody that's a father and a husband out there can definitely relate to that. And I know what that's like when I've changed jobs and you feel the burden of paying the bills and stuff like that.
Yes, I mean, yeah, I'll definitely touch on that. I think I don't know whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I was always of the opinion that I should be playing, whether that be starting or whether that be on the bench, and I wasn't on the bench. And that kind of brought about its own pressures and its own problems in the end, because I was never, like, even as like a, this is going to sound a bit arrogant, even as like a 20-year-old, I'd be unhappy that I was a 20-year-old and I wasn't starting.
Or
like,
I think that's arrogance. I think that's setting your standards.
As a professional,
at the end of the day, you're not going to play with your mates down the park on a Saturday.
Yeah,
it's
true.
It's your job. Like, you've got that far. You've reached the highest you can reach. You know, you'd want to be starting. Of course, you would. Mm. I don't think that's an arrogance thing at all. I think that's a good thing.
Thanks.
but, good. Let's go.
But
get on it, you arrogant prick.
But yeah, like, obviously I went through quite a few weeks of that, especially when I was younger, and it just made me quite unhappy. And I never thought about it at the time, but then when you hear like boys come out and talk about their struggles now, and you can relate to it. And I'm not saying that I was like it for very long, but like, I think you definitely dip in and out of it. Like, it's not, you can, like, and it's okay to feel a bit crap sometimes. Mm. So yeah, like, I've never labelled it as having any problems, especially when I was younger. But then I did feel like when I did feel the pressure massively, like I said, when I was a bit older, especially when Livy turned up, like, straight away I was like, oh shit. Obviously I was really excited, but it did dawn on me straight away that I was sort of 28. I think I had another, say, like 20 months on my contract, like, definitely. And yeah, hit home then that, yeah, you've got a little one to look after, and obviously a wife that's, she was on maternity leave at the time. And then in terms of the transition, I think it was the biggest thing that affected me was, not the biggest, sorry, but like, one of the things that did affect me was, how am I going to transition, or what am I going to do to transition to not have any sort of difference in lifestyle? But I don't want Rach to go back to work 5 days a week. I want her to stay at 4 days. I don't want us to move house. I don't want Livy to have to change nursery. All that sort of stuff. And
a lot of people forget that from a sportsman's perspective, don't they? You know, when they look at players in rugby and in football, I don't want to keep using football as an example, but they say rugby, you know, if you get a good transfer, it could be halfway up the country. You know, you've got to pull your kids out of school. That's a big, big, big pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine Dave, like me and you, suddenly now we just said to our wives, okay, well, I'm taking this job, you know, 300 miles down the road. We've got to pull the kids out of school, all their friends and everything.
Yeah.
Just, I know. And we have spoken about it only recently to do with football. But when people like Jack Grealish go from living in Villa to going to Manchester, it's huge. And Harry Kane potentially going from North London up to Manchester, they're massive moves to move your entire family. But for me, Davey, I think the point is we don't touch on those male pressures of things like that. Like, you didn't want your wife to go back to work full time. I can completely relate to that, because when we had our two girls, I didn't want Kelly to go back to work full time at all. Kelly's my wife. And after we had our first daughter, she went back to work 3 days a week. And then when we had our second daughter, I didn't really want her to go back at all. And she was in a stressful job in recruitment. And she, while she was really good at it, she suffered with it a lot, with the emotional attachment of getting upset and bringing stress home after work. And I just didn't want her to go back to work. And I wanted to be able to provide for her. And that pressure is definitely there as a husband and a dad. I think, realistically, we put too much of that on ourselves, that we've got to be the best father and husband we could possibly can, and we've got to provide, and we've got to pay all the bills and everything like that. I completely relate to that, mate. It's a shit feeling.
I mean, I would like to say as well that my wife's career is bloody fantastic. Like, she's awesome what she does, which helps out a lot. But yeah, like, I mean, she always chose, as soon as we had Levy, she chose to do 4 days a week. And
what does she do, Debbie?
She's a solicitor in London.
Wow,
so
nice.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
That comes in handy on those rugby nights out, eh?
No, yeah, so she's awesome. Like, she's great at her job. But yeah, it's just like, you know, we talked about it beforehand, and we talked about her going back, whether she'd need to go back 5 days. But you know what it's like. You know that she would rather not go back 5 days. And yeah, I was always like, no, look, I'll make sure whatever happens, we'll keep everything like the status quo the same.
Especially when she's a solicitor, which is, let's have it right, it's quite powerful. It's a powerful job, isn't it? It's something
where
you've got to be on your game 24/7 and you've got to be showing a strong face constantly. So I should imagine she's probably quite a strong, motivated woman.
No, yeah. I mean, yeah, she keeps me in line.
She wears the trousers, though.
Oh, let's be honest, like, all women wear the trousers in the relationship, don't they?
Yeah, you don't tell them that, though, mate. Don't tell them that.
There's ways around it. There's ways of plugging it.
I remember when I stayed in a job for probably just over 2 years and suffered with depression the whole time that I was there. Because of that, I knew that I had to bring the money in. I knew I had to make a certain amount of money a month to pay all the bills and to support Kelly, to keep Kelly and the kids happy.
Did you ever find as well, though, because I had it, when you set the figure, don't you, in your head, of the money you need to make. And even if you were like a pound under on that paycheck, let's say, for example, it's meant to be 1,800 quid and you make 1,790. Did you ever, that for me would always be like, fuck, I've not made enough. It's £10. Like, but that psychological in your brain, I've not earned the right amount of money.
I just remember being miserable. I was miserable, and it had more detrimental effect on our family home than ever I should have let it happen. And I was completely fixated and driven by having to support everybody whilst not thinking about myself. And if you ask Kelly now, she'd probably say it was the worst 2 years of our marriage.
Yeah, you were miserable.
I was just miserable.
You was miserable.
But money is emotional, isn't it? Like, it brings up loads and loads of emotion.
100%. Yeah, and again, saying what, relating back to what you were saying, Davey, I would rather be miserable every single day and them kids get everything that they need and my wife doesn't need the stress from work. Yeah. I can handle it. I don't mind that.
Because there's nothing worse than seeing that I'm not earning money.
Mate, it's stressful. If you're a dad and a husband, you don't want to be sitting at home not doing anything. It's shit. It's shit.
Yeah.
That's why Al throws himself through fences and gets ridden and stuff like that. And that's some funny things on social media.
Got to pay the bills, didn't you?
That's it.
Oh dear. So where are you now with you in your career? You're sort of your financial planner, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I'm at a firm called Timothy James and Partners, or TJP for short. TJP. And yeah, basically, mate, we're trying to help people live how they want to live using the money they got.
Basically, so, what we're talking about it.
Yeah. So I've got a tenner and I want a Maserati. How do we do it?
Yeah.
Put it on the lottery.
Well, there you go. That's advice, isn't it?
Do you think, are you happier now, Davey?
Mate, I love it. Yeah, to be fair, I am actually really, really, really happy. Like life is, it's been like a really busy 2 years. Like obviously Teddy's been born, mum passed away. Although I'm still financial planning, I changed jobs in November last year. Just pandemic hit everyone. So it's been, yeah, it's been interesting. But no, like we're in a really good place, to be fair. It's not been like a straight line, and as everyone knows, like, you know, you get your ups and downs and good days and bad days, but I wouldn't change anything that's happened apart from the obvious.
Do you ever meet people at work and they say that, talk about that work, and they talk about what they've done in their careers, and then you go, I used to play rugby, and then they're quite surprised at the standard you actually played?
Yeah, loads of people do that, yeah. Yeah, I don't think they, because I was like relatively good at planning, so I was qualified while I was playing rugby. Right. So when they kind of say like, oh, what's your background? So you've only just joined, and you're like, oh, well, I was at another place for like a year, and then for like the last 12 years I was playing rugby, and they're like, what? they're like, you're doing what? You're really small. I was like, yeah, thank you. But no, it's nice. But it's, I mean, to be fair, it's worked in my favour massively, because the place that I'm at, a lot of people quite like their sport. Doesn't necessarily, like, they don't really care what sport you do, but they quite like the fact that you've played sport. So it's just something to talk about with them, like sort of break the ice and stuff like that. And if you get a sports fan or rugby fan especially, it's it can be very handy. So
what a lad. Like I said before at the beginning, like I've been on nights out and they're just menaces. Honestly, they're animals.
Yeah.
Absolute animals. I've been in a kebab shop before where one of the blokes was, he'd bought a lamb kofta.
Yeah.
He'd asked for it to be on a wooden skewer.
Right.
They had this pita bread in this skewer, and he just pulled, when he got his kebab, they handed it to him. And he's in Hartford, Dave, like right on the street. And he pulled out this kofta and he gave it to a copper. He said, you hungry? And he went, I am actually. So he took it and then he got his knob out and just put it in the kebab where the thing was. And he went, now tell me you're hungry. His copper went, put that away or you're going to get nicked. Yeah. And he went, I'll do you a deal. If you can finish my kofta in under 2 minutes, I'll put it away. And he went, put it away now. And he went, no, eat it. And he's trying to get the kofta in his mouth. Obviously, he got nicked, but... Yeah, I just thought, they're just animals. They're just animals.
Yeah, no fear, no morals.
Well, Davey, thank you so much for coming on, mate. We really appreciate it. It's some really fascinating stuff in there, especially the body language stuff. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, crazy.
Oh, really?
Really crazy.
It's funny, I spoke to other boys at different clubs, and they might call it something else.
Yeah.
But like,
has it got a name?
No, for us, it was just like...
Do this.
Like literally, I'm guilty of it as well. If I saw someone with their hands on their knees, I'd be like, get your hands off your knees. But I know that there's a top team called Leinster who are from Dublin. And during their heyday, they were like European champions two or three times in a row, etc. But they used to call it like no tails. So like I think one of the old Leinster players he's talked about this. And yeah, they were very much like no tails. And they would do it on a night out as well, apparently. So if they were like steaming, they'd be like no tails, and like whoever was like stumbling all over the place would like have to like sharpen up and like look like he's sober basically to get into a club. But
oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I think it's quite common, mate. I think.
Blimey. Well, Davey, thank you very much, mate. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for your time.
In the future, and stay in touch, mate.
Oh, cheers. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, mate. Care. Take care.
See you later.
Bye.
Ooh.
Woo!
Just in chat that was.
Huh?
I said, what a really interesting chat that was.
Mate, that blew my tiny little mind.
Why didn't you understand what I was saying then?
I didn't hear what you said. I was too busy having a Ric Flair moment.
he was great.
That blew my little brain.
It was a bit slow to start. I think he was a bit nervous about talking about stuff. But as soon as you started, that thing about the body language, man, I can't.
Mate, he could have not said anything else apart from that. Like,
you know, it's quite interesting as well. Like when we stopped recording, we just chatted for about 20 minutes. And he said as well, something I should have brought up and talked about was the trolling. Like, he used to look at his name. He used to Google his name after he played really badly and see the abuse. And that really did struggle, make him struggle for a while.
Yeah. And quite a lot of people have said in the past that that's the most dangerous thing to do, isn't it? Google your name.
Yeah, mate. 100%.
I know other people have said that. But look, Davey, thank you so much for coming on, giving up your time to the podcast. It was a lovely chat. Thanks for all the insights. Thanks for chatting about your journey.
Beautiful, beautiful. Right. We got a belter. We all know what time
it
is.
Here we go. Mr. Confident.
We all know what time it is.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Okay. So I'm hoping this is going to meet up to old Brenda and her baggy.
Brenda's mate. Box.
Now, this is only from 3 days ago.
Holy shit.
Right. The headline reads, sorry. Let me go again. I thought I was at home, says employee who wanked in office on his first day back in work.
Come on, keep going.
Before I get to the story, I want to show you the picture of the guy. I mean,
no, tilt it a bit more.
What the fuck? Jesus. Okay.
Right.
Adrian Mole set himself go, isn't it?
Monday was a big day for Leonard Brown, his first day back in the office after just 17 months of working from home because of COVID. But the 56-year-old man had been at his desk less than 2 hours when he whipped his boy out and started wanking himself off. The admin worker from Lowestock, Suffolk, was dismissed from his job immediately as security guards pulled him from the premises. But now, dad of seven, Leonard, is campaigning to get his job back, claiming he was let go for unfair dismissal.
Oh, my God!
It's a hell of a shock to suddenly be let go, but it's also more hell of a shock to be suddenly in your office after 17 months and realising you're not at home. Every day for 17 months at 11 a.m, I would have a handy shandy.
Stop it.
I honestly did it without thinking. I soon realised my mistake when I heard the gasps from the admin team.
But mate, does it say where he works? Don't tell me it says where he works.
I admit my actions were wrong, but I think I should have some retraining before coming back into the office. Yeah, like, don't pull yourself off at work in front of everyone.
Don't masturbate in the office, yeah.
Christ.
I want to go to that training.
I want my job back, and especially my desk.
For fuck's sake.
Millions of people will be heading back to the offices over the next few weeks, and I feel this will happen again. I'm absolutely sure of it. Companies need to be more aware of people coming back after being at home for so long. It's been an epidemic, not just for COVID, but for wanking as well.
Mate, literally, I'm dumbfounded. I don't know what to say. He can't be serious.
Oh, God. A source at the firm, which cannot be named for legal reasons, said...
Ah, rubbish!
Of course we sacked him. He wanked in front of everyone. You can't do that!
Where do we think he worked? Come on. Where do we think he worked?
But look at him.
Mate, he's 56 years old, and he looks like a strange Adrian Mole type man.
I mean, nothing against the geezer. Right. But
that, I mean, it's horrific. Do you know, I know I haven't laughed much, but I'm just in shock. Mate, he's somebody's granddad.
Well, he's got seven kids, for Christ's sake.
He's got seven kids and he's beating his meat at work. What? Like it's nothing.
Oh, God. It's a good one. But again, I've got to give credit to John O'Colan. Fuck me. That was the geezer from... Slippery Fat Club, wasn't it? Jono Kirkland. Sorry, Jono. Oh,
mate, yeah, but man, what an amazing story. Jono, I don't know what tabloids you read, but hook us up, brother. We need some more of them. That was brilliant. But
and Leonard Brown, you should be ashamed of yourself, mate.
I think that shocked me more than anything.
More than Brenda's baggy minge.
Brenda's baggy minge was funny, but that shocked me. Some geese are just tugging it off at work like it's nothing. Mate, well, some people get off on some scary shit, man. But I mean, well, to just blatantly forget that you're at work and tug one off, it is incredible.
Good Lord. Well, fun day at work tomorrow, mate.
Yeah. the absolutely comical value of that is I'm going to my head office tomorrow as well. But I won't be doing that if anybody from work is listening, okay?
Yeah.
That's not happening. I'm not like that. I'm sweet. Professional in my blue shirt, keeping it cool.
Sweet dreams tonight. Keep them dry.
There's no promise of that.
Right. Well, listen, thank you everyone for listening to another episode. Thank you to Davey Lewis for giving up his time to come on the podcast. Thank you for you for all the great questions you gave him. And thank you to me for a belt of a story via Jono Kirkland.
Boom. Well done. Well said, mate. And from me, everybody, take care of yourselves. Enjoy the sun. It's on its way. And stay safe.
Peace. Bye-bye.
If you've been affected by any of the subjects we've spoken about on today's episode, please feel free to reach out to your friends and your loved ones. Failing that, you can contact the people at Mind and they'll be able to help. Their number is 0300 123 3393. Or failing that, go to mind.org.uk. Stay safe, be well, and enjoy the sun.